Silence!
Oppenheimer!
I think they're talking about us. No way.
I myself am strange and unusual.
This is Nerd Prey Radio!
Nerd alert!
These nerds are a threat to our way of life.
See, this is the stuff that brings nerds together.
So it's sort of social. Demented and sad, but social, right?
If I'm interested in it, then by definition, it is nerdy.
Are you in loser denial or something?
I'm a nerd, and I'm pretty proud of it.
My dad's a nerd.
And welcome to episode 109 of Nerd Pride Radio. 109, the number of John F. Kennedy's boat when he was in the Navy, PT-109, patrol torpedo boat. I think that's right. Okay, ask me how I'm doing today. Go on, ask me. I am awesome! My name is Mike Jones. I am a D&D slash Pathfinder nerd, a history nerd, a sci-fi nerd, a comic book nerd, computer nerd, comedy nerd, science nerd, gaming nerd, plus there are probably like seven other kinds of nerd. I only wish I was nerdy enough to be. You are listening to Nerd Pride Radio. This is the place I go every week to haver on about all the nerd stuff that just won't fit in my head anymore. My co-hosts this week, Los Bandidos Mutantes. And before I get to the meticulously plotted portion of this podcast, we got a little something. That's right, it's a little feedback. It's actually from my mom. I told the story last week about how my most harrowing flight experience and the worst thing I could think of is when my little brother threw up chocolate milk, but I wasn't really sure. So my mom wrote in and said, yes, Kyle threw up the chocolate milk on the airplane. We were going to San Antonio from California. Your dad had not gone on ahead. We were going to Wilford Hall for your checkup. We were on a military air vac. I am so surprised you remember that. Wow. Messy. All right. So I was close. I remembered the chocolate milk. That was the important part. I couldn't remember the circumstances of why we were there. And yeah, that was apparently, I also talked to my mom on the phone. Apparently, I was supposed to go back to San Antonio every year for checkups because I was born with the cleft lip, cleft palate. They had done the repair in the military hospitals there. Great repair, by the way. Awesome job. And I was supposed to go back every year so they could keep following up. And I think after that particular trip, my mom decided that these follow-ups were really more for them than they were for us. So therefore, we never went back after that. So there you go. Thanks, Mom. I appreciate it. All right. Now it is time for the meticulously plotted portion of this podcast. This is the time for me when I talk. Hold on. I'm not following my script. Let me get down here. Oh, yeah. Here it is. This is the time for me when I talk about whatever's been on my mind for the last week. Something strikes me as interesting during the course of my busy, busy week. I add it to my master list in my handy-dandy pocket mod, which I have right here. And the best stuff off of this list gets spewed out all over you guys every week when I record. You lucky dogs. And straight in the master list. Okay, here's the thing. I have not been putting a lot of preparation into my podcast the last 2-3 weeks. I've been going very lighthearted. I haven't done any of the heavier podcasts, the more thought-provoking podcasts. And so I have a thought-provoking topic to discuss, or at least, you know, for me. And it's heavy and it's hard for me to sort out and think about. Or, you know, since I just got back from the Black Hills, we went up there and saw a wedding and we went to Rushmore and we did all sorts of fun stuff. I could do another, you know, what I did on my vacation podcasts where I don't have to think or challenge anybody. And ultimately, I decided I think I'm going to go the heavier route. I think I'm going to cover this one because it's been something that's been on my pocket mod for months, literally months, and I just never quite get around to really trying to hash it out. So I think I'm going to do that now. And what I did on my fall vacation, I'll save it for next week. And then that way, if any of it is still interesting at that point, then I'll go ahead and do it rather than, you know, right now, hey, we just got back riding high, having a good time. But maybe it's not as interesting to you guys. So we'll wait till next week. Let it ferment a little bit and see what's still interesting at that point. So, here, well, you know what? before I get into the really heavy stuff, let's do a little science corner.
Ooh, she blinded me with science.
She blinded me with science.
Blinded me with science.
That's right. That music means if you don't walk away now, you might be in danger of learning something. Okay, we're going to do a little thought experiment here. And clearly I'm going to be leading you somewhere, so just follow along. All right, imagine we've got a school. And let's imagine that school has two separate lunchrooms. All right, for example, you know, it's a combined school, high school, junior high, and you've got the younger kids are separated off, and they eat in a separate lunchroom. Who knows why? Let's say you've got two separate lunchrooms in your school. And after a while, someone starts to notice some performance issues in some kids. And so they trace it back to the lunchroom, and they find out that, you know what? All the kids who eat in the east lunchroom, out of those kids, 30% of them wind up having measurable cognitive deficiency compared to the control group. The other lunchroom, no, we don't have any problems. But in this lunchroom, 30% are showing a marked, notable, statistically significant decline over their test scores from previous years. Clearly, something's wrong with that lunchroom. What kind of steps would the school take? What kind of steps would the parents and the community take to rectify that issue? Because clearly, something's wrong with the food coming out of that lunchroom. All right, is it the water? Is it the, I mean, look, we get it all from the same suppliers. We are going to track down what the difference is between these two. I mean, is there something in the equipment in there that's introducing some sort of pathogen? Is there who knows what? All right, but what lengths would we go to figure out what's wrong with that lunchroom? All right. Similarly, all right. See, obviously, I'm leading you somewhere. Let's keep going. Similarly, let's say it's same high school, but instead of the lunchroom, we found out that, you know, the kids who attend class in this room, all right, and it doesn't matter if it's English class, it doesn't matter if it's math class, it doesn't matter if it's music class, because this room has many functions and it rotates out. It's a multi-purpose room, but we found out that every kid who attended class in that room, you know, every day, all semester, every kid who went in there is tested, and we find out that 30% of them, I keep saying every kid and then realizing I have to reduce it to 30%. But let's say of all the kids, we noticed a problem. And so we did some testing. We find out that kids who had classes in that room for the whole semester, again, 25 to 30% of them show marked cognitive deficiency, marked reduction in performance. All right. And maybe it's only 3-4 points, but that's statistically significant. That's a huge difference. I mean, that's the difference between getting into this college and getting into that college. I mean, that's a lot of performance. Something is happening to their heads. Something is reducing their function when they're in a classroom. What would we do to fix that problem? We would tear that thing apart. Clearly, there's some sort of gas leak in there. Clearly, there's asbestos. There's something in that room that is harming our children, damaging our kids. What lengths would we go to fix that? Okay. Now I've led you there. You've thought about that. Okay. That's what football does. All right. And I'm not anti-football. All right. Don't get me wrong. I am not anti-football. I watch football. I enjoy football. Not as much as other people, but the fact of the matter is in a study out there, I believe sponsored by the NFL, although don't quote me, I may be confusing that with the anti-vaccination study later. I'll get to that one. But in a study out there, they found that 30% of high school football players showed a notable cognitive reduction. All right, and the only factor involved, once you eliminate everything out, the only factor involved is the fact that they played football. Other sports, not the same issue. But football in high school reduces brain function in 30% of the players. 30%, that's huge. Okay? Now, with the other two cases, we think it's in the lunchroom, we think it's in the food or the water, we would move heaven and earth to get that fixed, okay? We found out it was a particular classroom. Oh, we would tear that building down. We would find the culprit. We would rebuild that from scratch. We would start over, okay? But it's football. Well, you know what? Yeah, people know the risks they're taking. Oh, you know what? It's not as bad. You're exaggerating. You know what? Those studies are probably flawed anyway. And we just ignore it, and we let it go. And again, not everyone in the world is ignoring it. I'm obviously not the first one to jump on this bandwagon. But when we've done autopsies on deceased NFL players, because enough of them, I mean, NFL's been around forever, and we've done autopsies on many of them who have died, 79 of them, in fact. And of 79 of the former NFL players who were autopsied, 76 showed brain damage. That's huge. 96% of pro football players suffered some sort of brain damage. That's just massive. I mean, that's a number that I can't even wrap my head around. And again, I'm not saying that I'm against football, and I'm not saying we need to eliminate football, or that we. But I am saying that, oh my God, that kind of number, especially, you know, in a high school sport, our high school kids are being affected to that degree. This warrants further study. This warrants, okay, you know what? You want to say that those are flawed studies? Those are huge numbers. Fine. You want to say they're flawed studies? You want to say all the science out there is bad on this subject? Great. Then let's prove that. All right, get me some people out there and prove that. Let's repeat that study and repeat it again. And then after the third or fourth or fifth time, when it's finally irrefutable, can we do something then? No, we probably can't. All right. And the answer isn't necessarily tearing down the institution of football. Maybe the answer is simply providing better protections, modifying the rules to make it safer, doing something. And again, I know people will say that this is going to kill football entirely, but unfortunately, we can't have that discussion because it's turned into a political issue. It's no longer about science, and it's no longer about protecting children. It's about patriotism. How is that possible? Why is this suddenly a rallying flag for true patriots to get together and defend our institution of football from these pansy liberals who want to? It's not about liberal versus conservative. It's about, hey, we have scientific studies that show that children are being permanently damaged by this supposedly fun and educational activity. Do we want to do something about that? And the answer is no. Let's just hunker down in our bunkers and pretend that the other side is making shit up, and then let's just ignore it. Let's make it into a patriotic flag-waving issue and walk away from it. Again, I don't want to get rid of football. I like football. All right, but I do want to find out if we're, and that's the problem, is it's such an institution. It's not just a patriotic pastime. You know, it's America's game. It is screw baseball. Yeah, you want to call it baseball the American pastime? No, bull. It's football. American football is the American game. It is the biggest money in sports, and it's huge. It is absolutely huge, and there's not much we can do about it other than, you know, bury our heads in the sand and wait for it all to pass over, I guess. That's what we seem to be doing. And it just kills me. Like I say, there are things that we could do that would retain the institution of football while providing greater safety measures. I mean, do you remember the days? No, you don't. None of us do. But you've read about the days when football was played without any protective equipment whatsoever. I mean, a leather helmet and, you know, maybe some knee pads or whatever. I mean, it was a leather helmet and spiked shoes. That was the protection you got while you were out playing football in the early days of football, a century ago. And when the call came to start putting pads on their players, I mean, now you look at them and they look like they're out there in a suit of armor, right? Okay. And that suit of armor, we're finding out, is not enough. That suit of armor with the full helmet and the giant pads and all the stuff that goes with it, that's not enough to protect kids from head injury, apparently. But at the time that we started with those, just the first versions of some sort of padding, some sort of protection out on the field, there was a similar outcry of how it was ruining the sport of football. That it was destroying the game because, well, what are we, a bunch of pansies? What we need pads? Seriously? A helmet? Why you need a hard helmet? I got a leather cap. I'm good. Let's go. So there was a similar outcry then, and eventually we got through it, and we found ways to implement some safety measures that protected players. And we moved on, all right? Well, now we're finding out that, guess what? There's more danger there than we realized. Now that we know it, why are we not doing something to help fix it? And again, it's because it's characterized as well, you're out to destroy an American institution. You're out to destroy a huge money-making venture. You're out to, And it's not about that. It's about protecting people. And if we can find a way to protect people and maintain football, awesome. But we need to look at it and have a discussion, and we can't. Okay? All right, that was one. And then the other thing is science, and I put these two together because it's a matter of looking at scientific studies and then just ignoring them and throwing them out the window because they don't agree with you. This is going to be a bigger issue down the road, the idea of how reliable is science. And because our American public's trust in science is very low. We've gotten to the point where the American public treats, and they do this because the media treats it this way, the American public and the American media quite often treat science as if it's a matter of opinion. They say, well, look, we can find a study over here that says this, but we can find a study over here that says the exact opposite, so therefore, science is a matter of faith, really. You don't have to, come on, it's just statistics, well, who cares? All right, yeah, but there's a preponderance of science. There are repeated studies. There are, you weigh in all of the evidence and you realize that, yeah, okay, I have a study out here that says that smoking is good for you. You should smoke menthols when you have a cold. Now, I have a study that says that, but I also have thousands of other studies that say, oh yeah, but it causes cancer. Okay? And you weigh the evidence. Now, smoking is one where we've had the decades to finally accept the scientific evidence, and nobody seems to question that. But, when it comes to head injuries in football, all right, well, we got a ways to go. All right, and so tying it together, I found out recently, and this is just funny to me, one of the largest anti-vaccination groups out there sponsored their own study into the link between vaccinations and autism. And they started off with, they had, just a small sample. This was just a test run to see if their methodology would be viable. And in this initial test run of just, a few monkeys that they were testing, they saw that, hey, look, there might be a link here, but we'll need to do a larger study to actually prove that. So the anti-vaccination people jumped on board and said, hell yeah, we'll provide the money for that. Let's go. Let's see it. And after providing all the money for this study, they went through the entire thing. And at the end, they found out that, no, they had absolutely no evidence whatsoever that there was any link between autism and vaccinations. Even using the old style vaccinations that were supposedly more dangerous, but we've since changed since then. No, even using the old style vaccinations, the really dangerous ones, no link whatsoever. And the very first thing that happens when this comes out, all right, when asked about it, is the anti-vaccination people go, oh, well, clearly our study was flawed. It wasn't flawed when you first looked into it. It wasn't flawed when you started pumping millions of dollars into supporting it. It went, probably not millions. It was probably close to hundreds of thousands, is my guess, but I didn't look at those. But it wasn't flawed then. Why is it suddenly flawed now? Oh, it's flawed because it came up with the wrong answer. No, that's not how science works. And that's the problem, is that's how a lot of people think science works, is that you're just looking to see if it matches what you already believe. And if it doesn't, well, it was probably broken in some way. We can look for explanations and justifications for why that study must have been broken in the first place. It just kills me. So again, it'll be a topic I'm going to talk about more down the road, because I keep going back to articles about people's faith in science. And because, man, I hear scientists out there in interviews, on podcasts, and when they're asked about science and the scientific method and how the process works and publishing and journals and all this business that goes around science, they have this absolutely unwavering belief that science is ironclad. And then you say, well, yeah, but in our current publishing model, isn't there a lot of pressure to come up with positive results? Because while, yes, a lot of science is running your experiment and going, hey, there's no link. Hey, look, there was nothing there. Look, we found nothing. And that adds to our body of scientific knowledge. There's a lot of science that does that, but there's also a lot of real significant pressure professionally and monetarily to come up with these sexier studies and come up with stuff that actually does prove stuff. There's pressure on these mortal human beings to create results. And therefore, doesn't that mean something? I mean, doesn't that, you know, don't you have to take the human factor into account? And then they always go, well, okay, yes, that's true, but science as a whole. And so, I mean, to me, I love science. I have a lot of faith in science. But also, there's that little edge that says, yeah, but I know we could be doing this better. There are better ways to be doing it. That, okay, I was going to save this for another podcast. But one of them is journals moving to a model where you don't pick up an article based on the results. Because usually you have scientists off who design their experiment, they run their experiment, they do their whole business, they collect all their data, they write up their conclusions, and then once they've got the full article, then they take it to journals and look to get it published. All right, and instead of that, because that, again, journals are then looking for, you know, if I've only got, you know, 10 slots this month and I've got 500 articles to pick from, the tendency is to pick the sexier articles, pick the ones that are cooler, for lack of a better word. And instead, what a lot of journals are moving to, and I fully support this, is the idea of, no, we agree to take your study based on your methodology. You give us your experiment. You tell us what it is you're going to do, and we agree to your methodology ahead of time and go, yes, that's what we will publish. And then that way, after you run your experiment, we publish it, all right? And no matter how your results turn out. So now you don't feel like you've got this pressure on you to, well, yeah, but if I'm not showing any results, what are the chances they're going to take me? Or for that matter, the idea that there are lots of ways that you can manipulate numbers after the study is concluded. You can kind of manipulate numbers and look around for, okay, well, the effect that we were looking for wasn't really significant, but if we juggle the stats a little bit and look over here, oh, look, but this effect is sort of significant. Maybe if we can, there's ways you can juggle things, and this would eliminate a lot of that. And again, nothing's ever going to be perfect, but maybe we get to an even more perfect science than what we have right now. But again, I've been reading and listening and absorbing a lot of information on the subject, but I haven't actually, it's all been really passive. I haven't done a whole lot yet to formulate some thoughts on it. So I'm just kind of giving it to you off the top of my head right now. It's something I'll come back to. So, but enough about science. What's up next?
And now for something completely different.
Yeah, it's something completely different. This is just something I don't have a category for yet. And I don't, again, my thoughts are really unformed on this one. It's been on my pocket mod for ages. It's just been there in the list forever. It's something I think about a lot, but I never quite get where I'm going on it. So let's just throw it out there. Let's get started on it and see what evolves. Because the trigger right now is, I told you all about the Fantasy Movie League that I've been playing in and still having a great time. And I told you, you know, it's interesting watching this new community starting from scratch, these people who have now come together around a thing that they all happen to enjoy, which is movies and this movie league in particular. And so they're having conversations and they're building community, and they're, even in the very flawed forum comment system that they have over there, these people are finding ways to come together and have different kinds of conversations. And it's interesting watching that community form itself like that and to be a part of that. But then this week, oh, it got ugly. And I realized, oh, that's right. I forgot that this happens. Is everyone just started turning on each other over this issue of it's how the bonus runs for this game, that, you know, if you get the best performing movie, if you get the best performing cinema, there's extra bonuses in there, and it unbalances the game in some ways. I like the bonuses. I think maybe they're a little too extreme. I'd like to see them, you know, retained but reduced. It doesn't matter. What the bonuses themselves, the issue itself, is not really the issue. The issue is somebody comes out and says, oh, this is crap. And this is a guy who, by the way, was in the top 20 last season. I mean, this guy knows his game, and he's still doing very well, but not as well as last season. And he says, look, these new bonuses, this new system is just killing me. If things don't change, I'm out. This will be my last season. I can't keep playing like this. And he gives this whole long diatribe of why, you know what, if they can't change, I'm leaving. And while I think he's being a little overwrought about it, or she, I don't know genders of anybody on this game, but while this person is being a little overwrought about it, and I think a little extreme, I'm like, okay, but I understand. I mean, I'm there with you thinking, okay, yeah, the bonuses are a little extreme. All right, I would like to see them cut about in half, maybe. All right, but, you know, if they don't change how the game is played, I'm still going to keep playing. But, you know, so, but, you know, maybe rather than making the threat of, look, change it or I'm out of here, you know, there's better ways to have this conversation. And then the response from the other side is, oh, my God, yeah, well, if you don't like it, then just get the hell out. And it was a lot of dumping on this person and everyone. And some people spoke up to kind of defend a little bit. But for the most part, no, it was a lot of people just ganging up on this person for making a legitimate complaint, by the way, and ganging up on them and saying, well, if you don't like it, get out. These are the hardcore fanboys, the people who are that's not even a proper characterization of them. I shouldn't even say that but it is a matter of this, I don't know, this groupthink, this mob mentality and a way of handling people who disagree with you that precludes any real conversation about it. Okay? Because the person who made the initial complaint, while I thought they were being a little extreme about it, at least were respectful about it and brought it up in a reasonable way. Again, a little overwrought, but reasonable. But half of the respondents talking back to him are basically shutting out any possibility of any discussion. It's basically love it or leave it. Either you're for us or you're against us, and that's it. And that brings me back to this topic that has been sitting here in my pocket mod forever about, God, why can't we communicate? What the heck is wrong with people that we can't seem to talk anymore? This conversation that I'm seeing on a fantasy movie league, which consists of all of, you know, 12,000 players, of which maybe a couple hundred are active in talking on the forums. I mean, this is a tiny little universe of people. All right. But you listen to that and just the way I've characterized it, you know, very reminiscent of Bush's anti-terrorism speeches. You're either for us or you're against us. And it precludes any sort of discussion on the matter. It's like, look, either you completely agree with what I'm saying or you're a terrorist. Those are your only choices. Well, okay, I guess there's no way we can have a discussion about it then. That's it. And most topics are like that. And so, I don't know. I try really hard to see different sides of every issue. I try and see where people are coming from. All right, hold on. Let me pause. I'm going to pause. I'm going to get a drink. I'm going to get my thoughts together. Give me a minute. Okay, I'm back. Empathy. That's the word I was going to build to. Because in conversations like these, where it's an all or nothing, you characterize people as for you or evil. I mean, that's really it. You're characterizing your opposition as evil. When, for the most part, in most situations, people aren't evil. People have very good reasons for believing what they do. And just because they have a different belief system than you doesn't make them wrong or evil, necessarily. And so it's like the communication could be there. I mean, maybe you could, you know, even if you can't convince somebody, you could at least get them to a level of understanding. If only people could listen, if only there was some sense of empathy. And that's where I was going with this. In my own experience, trying to empathize with people around me. Again, I started paying attention to my habit of doing this when it was my kids. As my kids are getting into their typical junior high school social situations, there's peer pressure and there's a lot of he said, she said, and there's all this social drama that goes on. Maybe for some of you, you know people who it's carried on way beyond high school as well. It happens. But with my kids, you know, here's my kids who I can directly influence and I can directly guide in these matters. And so they will complain about this person who is being, oh, God, she's terrible to us. She's being mean for no reason. She's on a power trip all the time. Everybody hates her. And you stop and go, okay, yeah, okay, she's on a power trip, sure. Yep, she's being over-controlling and bossy. From everything you described, that's exactly what's going on. Why is she doing that? Why? and you think back and you go, oh, yeah, do you know her parents? Oh, you do. Can you imagine what it would be like growing up in that house with that kind of pressure? Can you imagine why someone might be a little unhappy? Can you imagine why there's all sorts of things that go into it. And it doesn't make it right. It doesn't make it acceptable. I mean, you know, a person who's being a jerk is still being a jerk, even though you understand why they're being a jerk. But it helps to have some understanding, a little empathy. And so I've been trying to do that all around. And it's easy to do with kids. I mean, when I'm talking about junior high and high school kids, or even for my younger ones, elementary school kids, you know, when you're talking about kids, naughty kids, you know, kids who some teachers just kind of dismiss as being rotten kids, or some adults, community members, dismiss them as being, oh, look, they're hoodlums, they're thugs, they're whatever, you know, and dismiss them. But for me, it's easy with kids to see, yeah, but come on, look where they came from. Look at what they have done, you know, the good, the bad, and see that, you know what, if this kid had had a chance, if there had been someone in their lives who could have given them that encouragement, that boost, someone who could have given them some, I don't know, just a different way of looking at things, they might have turned out different, you know, and maybe they still could, you know. But providing that kind of empathy, that kind of understanding for kids, I can see it a lot easier. Once they get to be adults, that's where I start having problems. And part of it is with my Mr. Rogers style personality that I try and take on, the idea that, look, the reason I do this podcast is all about love. It's about all the nerdy crap that I love and that I want to share with everybody else. I love everything. I love, you've heard me talk. I've done it on at least three different podcasts already, talking about, the power of positivity and having a positive outlook, intentionally looking at the bright side of stuff, intentionally working on smiling, intentionally working on making yourself happy. And again, it sounds simplistic coming out of my mouth. If I were someone who was suffering from severe depression, I'm sure I'd be listening to this going, oh, yeah, just be happy. I'm sure. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. But for me, it works. And science shows that for a lot of people, it works. And the train is coming. Can you guys hear the train? I'm going to keep on talking because I don't want to wait this thing out. But I may have to stop here in just a second, just in case. But anyway, I believe in this positivity. I believe in this idea of working to see the good in all stuff if I can. And again, with kids, it's easy. When I move beyond that, I mean, okay, Hitler, that's a little too big. I don't think I'm going to find, a soft spot, a place of understanding in my heart for Hitler just yet. But I don't know. Warlords in foreign countries, the people who order their soldiers out to slaughter people with machetes. Can I find a good reason now? Probably can't do that one either. And so I'm like going through stuff going, God, you know, if I want to find this empathy, this understanding for all people, man, I really got to work at this thing. So I'm trying to bring it down to where's my level? Where can I draw that line? Because obviously, look, 3-year-olds, I can have empathy and understanding for a 3-year-old, even a really horrible, naughty one who drives me out of my mind crazy because they're just so obnoxious. But at least you can understand the kid. And all right, now the train's too loud. Hold on. So anyway, now that the train's gone, I'm trying to find out where my line of empathy falls. I mean, again, kids, easy to find empathy for kids. All right, they're not even fully responsible for their actions up to a certain point. It's easy to understand where a kid is coming from. And again, at the far opposite end, I've already named Hitler or, you know, machete wielding warlords as, you know, this far end of, okay, that's a little too remote. And so I'm trying to bring it back towards one of the other ones I thought of is what's the guy's name that was, I brought him up a while back, who's he's selling holy water and salt to followers online. I mean, these religious scam artists who are literally selling people nothing and taking money from the desperate. And I'm like, oh, no, I don't think I can relate to them yet. All right, so where is my line? So I brought it into something personal. I'm like, okay, who was the person in my own personal life that I know personally that I dislike the most? And I came up with her. And because I have coworkers and friends who listen to this. I'm not going to name the person by name or even give enough detail about her to identify her, but some of you will know. And I'm like, oh, this woman drives me crazy. She drives me absolutely batty, and she is just selfish. I mean, she is a selfish, weaselly person. And I'm like, God, can I find empathy for her? Can I come up with a plausible story in my mind that explains why she acts the way she does and makes me at least go, okay, yeah, she annoys me, but oh, God, all right, I see how that could come about. And here's the problem is I can come up with a bunch of scenarios. All right, I can come up with a bunch of scenarios that involve an unhappy childhood, struggles growing up, and massive amounts of insecurity, because that's what it's ultimately going to come down for her, is massive amounts of insecurity, and that's why she treats other people the way she does, is because I think she hates herself. I really think she hates herself. And every story that I come up with, every time I try and put myself in her shoes and go, okay, why would someone behave that way? I can only come up with, yeah, she really doesn't like herself. And so this smarmy veneer of overconfidence that she has, and this weaselly attempt to manipulate others and try and get other people to do her work and try to, all this stuff that I see about her, I'm like, no, it comes down to, yeah, she's insecure and she hates herself. She really does not like who she is. And thus, she does all of this as a way to compensate. And I'm like, and there's lots of stories I can come up with that would make that happen for her. And ultimately, I'm like, okay, I get it. I've come up with these plausible stories. But, oh, while I understand it, I still don't like her. I mean, it's like, I can't even, it's like, emotionally, I'm not feeling anything for her because she's so unpleasant. Sorry, R2, I didn't mean to bump you. I'm shaking my fists here in frustration, and I'm bumping into R2. I'm like, wow, okay, for me personally, this is the line. If I want to be a more open and understanding and sympathetic, empathetic person, man, that's where my line is. It's this woman. And there's others who are just this side of the line, people who are a little closer to me than she is, who, oh, yeah. They drive me crazy, absolutely drive me crazy. But I know them well enough to go, yeah, but here's why. Here's why. I understand completely why. Still infuriating. I still don't want to talk to them. I still may avoid them for months at a time because I'm pissed at them. But I can still understand why they do it, and I can still find love in my heart for them. But, you know, because, you know, sometimes you got relatives who are absolutely batshit crazy. But despite the fact that they may drive me nuts, okay, I can find the sympathy for him. I can find the love for him. But this woman is like, oh, yeah, nope, I can't quite yet. I mean, like I say, I've got the story down at least. I've got a plausible story that if something was going to touch my heart about her plight, yeah, this is it. And it's just, I'm just not feeling it yet. So that's my own personal line that I'm working on. And again, I don't have a point. It's just that I have had this line, it just started as a line on my pocket mod that said universal empathy. That's all it says. And, you know, and you can make it into a religious thing about, you know, loving everybody or doing unto others as you would have them, you know, et cetera, this whole golden rule thing of, but for me, that golden rule starts with, you know, yes, treat everybody well. Don't be a dick. All right. As Will Wheaton says, don't be a dick. That's the golden rule. But for me, it goes a little bit further than not, you know, it's not just a matter of, yeah, don't act that way towards other people. It's like, yeah, but also try to understand, because we've got, there's more to it than just, you know, whether you're being a dick or not being a dick. There's understanding and communication. We have huge issues in this world that need people to talk about them. And there are lots of these issues that are being intentionally framed, intentionally sometimes, on both sides of the issue, intentionally framed in ways that preclude having conversations. The arguments are being phrased in ways that are merely creating rallying points for people who already support your side. So to increase their fervor and their, their desire to act, but at the same time also completely shutting down the perceived legitimacy of the other side, characterizing them as evil, selfish, and shutting down any chance of conversation of any sort. And it saddens me. And so I feel like, I don't know, empathy, understanding, conversation is something we all need to work on. And I just, man, I'm getting there. I'm trying really hard. Maybe I'll even go and sit down with this woman and just ask her, just talk to her, find out something about her more than just the superficial small talk that you get. You know, find out something about her. But boy, that seems like a lot of work. Certainly a lot of work to go to for one person. But maybe I will, just because she happens to be the sticking point. She's the God, I wish I could just give you names and details. I really wish I could, but I can't. That would be mean. That would be mean and unfair. So anyway, that's enough of that. We are all done with the meticulously plotted portion of the podcast. And I'm going to warn you, and I'm going to bring out R2 in just a minute, but we're only going to do a couple because I got to be out of here. All right. I got some other stuff that I need to work on, and I've got to be out of here. This is going to be a quick one, but you know, we'll give at least two, right? At the Pod-O-Matic. Hot dog. This is the Nerd Pride Radio Pod-O-Matic. At the end of every cast, I bring out R2 in his full, I should say the middle of every cast, shouldn't I? Now that I've added on listener betrayal at the end, it doesn't matter. At the end of every cast, I bring out R2 in his fully pimped out Pod-O-Matic bubble, and he rolls up random topics for me to talk about. And where do these topics come from, you ask? Well, that is where you come in. You want to hear me haver on about something? You send your question or topic to me by email, or better yet, in a private message on my forums, or, you know, hand me a slip of paper in person, send me a text, call me, something. Give me your Pod-O-Matics. I will add them to my Pod-O-Matic list. Pod-O-Matic is about whatever you want it to be. Okay, and first off, I just got to say, double aught. How auspicious. All right. For a podcast where I'm looking to do a couple of them, I get a double aught right away. But before I do that, let me read something from my brother Kyle. I have a little bit more feedback here. Hold on. Okay. I found it. Here it is. My brother sent me a private message. He has been sending, by the way, more Pod-O-Matic entries than anybody else recently. A lot. I'll even give you the full breakdown when I pull up the Pod-O-Matic list. But he is definitely winning if this were some sort of contest, which it's not. All right. But Kyle writes, "Hey, Mike, this isn't a Pod-O-Matic entry, but rather a segment I wanted you to talk about on the show. As you know, I've been sending you a lot of Pod-O-Matic entries over the last few weeks because, you know, I care about the show. So I'm wondering how much I'm dominating the entries. Like, I'm really killing it, right? It sucks that no one else really gives a crap like I do. But I guess that's what I'd expect from a bunch of selfish whiners that want to listen to your podcast for free and not have to go to the effort of contributing or even only sending in a couple of entries. Losers. Okay. Now, again, the views expressed in this letter, not necessarily reflected of those of this podcast or myself, but that's my brother's point. So, at his request, let's go ahead and pull up the Pod-O-Matic list and let's find out what the current numbers are. And, oh, I think my current numbers may be off. Oh, let me see. Are there actual counts here, or are these just raw numbers? I copied over to the new. I put it into Google Sheets. Give me just a second. I will fix this. Wow, phenomenal numbers. Okay. My brother Kyle has 35 of the current 155 entries out here, and I think he's actually got a dozen more that I haven't actually put on the list yet. I was on vacation. Sue me. So my brother's got 35 on the official count, probably closer to 45. Now, in second place, Humongous, 26. Mrs. Darks, 20. Ronster, 19. So again, all strong competitors, but man, Kyle has really gone overboard lately. So, you know, if you feel a need to respond to Kyle, go ahead and send me some more Pod-O-Matics. If you're tired of hearing his voice come up every third question, then for God's sake, send in some more and drown him out. But again, that's totally up to you. You guys have been wonderfully generous these last few weeks. Again, I have 155. I'm sitting well into the black on this, so I'm not complaining. But again, you know, my brother clearly has an attitude. I was going to say doesn't adhere to the don't be a dick policy, but actually my brother's a really nice guy, so hard to balance. So anyway, double ought. We're back to a question, right? And double ought is, it's from Eliahad. Eliahad says, Taylor Swift has picked you to ghostwrite a song for her new album, but the song has to be about a particular town. You get to pick the town, but what town is it? Oh, okay, Taylor Swift. All right, this one I can do. The last one was, she ate the sandwich. Who was she? I can't remember. Anyway, it doesn't make any difference, because now it's Taylor Swift. So this was easy because she would write a song. I mean, obviously, look, you say co-write. All right, but she's going to be doing all the heavy lifting here because I'm no songwriter. But Taylor's going to write a song about Ashland, Nebraska. All right, why Ashland, you ask? Well, that would be the location of Eugene T. Mahoney State Park, which is where the Boy Scouts have their jubilee every 3 years here in Nebraska. And it was, I believe it was Taylor Swift that I saw at Mahoney State Park years ago. I mean, like over a decade ago, easily over a decade ago. It was a long time back. And so it was before she became famous, but like just before she became famous. So she was like a rising star, and this was like an early, early gig for her. And you know what? And part of me says, maybe I'm imagining it. Maybe it wasn't her. But in my mind, it's always been Taylor Swift, because I swore that's who it was. It doesn't matter. But anyway, it would be about that night, and because all of her songs are breakup songs, therefore, it would have to be about me and her. And of course, she was way too young for me at the time, so it would be about her unrequited crush on me. Because look, I mean, while I am dashing and you know, I'm quite handsome, dashing, charming, wonderful dude, clearly, I couldn't. That would have been, it was so improper, and I had to very gently let her down that I appreciate your attentions, Miss Swift, but really, that would not be appropriate in any way, shape, or form. And then she would go off and write some very bitter diatribe about what a horrible ogre I was. And then that would be it. That would be my immortality in a Taylor Swift song. And again, let me reiterate that I in no way encouraged this. Certainly not. I mean, look, she was very sweet, charming, talented. I get that, but seriously, you're a kid. That would be so wrong. And I'm a married man. Not. Please. Just don't even do that. It's not, okay. Again, let me reiterate. In no way am I implying that I had an affair with Taylor Swift, many years ago at a Boy Scout Jubilee. Never happened. All right. I'm just saying that in this situation where I run into Taylor Swift and we're going to co-write a song together, I go, oh yeah, I think I saw you at Ashland, Nebraska. And we should write a song about that. And then she'd go, I don't think I ever performed in Ashland, Nebraska. You sure that was me? And then I'd say, well, yeah, I'm pretty sure it was you. And I would list off a couple of the songs that she did. And she'd go, no, that wasn't me. I'm pretty sure you're thinking of somebody else. And then I would walk away disappointed. But that would be my real brush with fame and Taylor Swift is, you know, me getting to say, hey, I've met you before. And her going, no, you didn't, you loser. Okay, that's all I got. 93 is from, it's from Stan. Oh, look at this. After all of Kyle's bravado, he's got nothing. Nothing. Stan says, in all of fiction and reality, who is your favorite robot, android, cyborg, etc.? Which one are you most attracted to? Oh, man, a question I've answered before. I can't remember how I answered it last time, so let's just come up with something new for this time. Probably, look, right at the top of my list of robots that I love is clearly R2, because he's right here. But also, I have a real serious fondness for Bender and for most of the robots from Futurama. I think their robots are really clever. I love Hedonism Bot. I love Tiny Tim. I really like Bender. So, you know, what's the big robot? What's the giant stompy robot? The my leg feels funny robot. I can't remember his name. It's not Crushinator. I think she's the beauty pageant winner. I can't remember. Anyway, doesn't make any difference. That's probably my favorite. But then it says, whoa, 92. Okay. In all fiction, who is your favorite robot, android, cyborg? Which one are you most attracted to? Attracted to a robot? Oh, that is, see, that's a lot harder. I would guess that in my last time I answered this question, I would have said, I would probably, because my mind immediately goes to Blade Runner and the Replicants and crazy, crazy Sean Young. All right, Daryl Hannah was also very attractive in that movie, but Sean Young had a particular brand of crazy back in her day that, yeah, I mean, look, stay away from it. As my friend Aliyah Head says, there are three things you don't want to put your dick into, and the third one is crazy. Isn't it fire, sharp, and crazy? Okay? Which is a terrible, terrible way to characterize women. What is wrong with you, Aliyah Head? You're a bad person. But Sean Young, again, very, very attractive brand of crazy in her day. But I don't know if that's really the robot I'm most attracted to. But, I mean, because, you know, you can always go 7 of 9. You can always go, but, I don't know. I'm going to let that one hang. Let's go with one more. Okay, that's 92. It's as if he's not trying. 32. You're telling me he's your favorite robot, and all of a sudden he gets all lazy about his job. 32 is from... Oh, I got nothing. There it is. Mrs. Darks. All right, still no Kyle. And this is going to be our last one. So, Kyle, you're going to have to send in more if you want to get some attention on this show. Mrs. Darks says, do you still own and listen to CDs, or have you switched to all digital music? I have switched to all digital. I have the latest CD I bought was obviously Sphere Ensemble from my friend Dave and his ensemble. And I absolutely love Sphere Ensemble. But the very first thing I did when I got it, we went for a drive. We were going somewhere, and so we popped it into the CD player in the van, and we actually got to listen to the whole album all the way through, and it was really cool. But then, right away, popped into my computer, ripped the tracks down into iTunes, loaded it onto my phone, and that's where I listen to it now. I'm all digital on everything. So, was there a further question to that, Mrs. Darks? 32, there it is. Nope, that was the end of that question. Yeah, it's all digital. That's all I got. So, anyway, hey, that is the very end of our Podomatic. So, I'm going to turn it over to GLaDOS for a recap.
Remember when the platform was sliding into the fire pit and I said goodbye, and you were like,
no way.
And then I was all, we pretended we were going to murder you.
That was great.
This podcast is copyright 2015 by Nerd Pride Radio. The opening and closing theme is Death Metal Disco by Ian Kronk. My bumper music this week was She Blinded Me with Science as performed by William Shatner. All the songs I use on my podcast are available on iTunes. Check them out, buy them, enjoy them. I wouldn't put them in my podcast if I didn't. Love them. If you want your very own pocket mod, go on over to pocketmod.com, get instructions for printing and folding one absolutely free. You want to do something nice for this podcast? Recommend it to your friends. Get other people to come in and join in on this party. Check out my free games on my free games page. If you want to contact me, my email is mike@nerdprideradio.com, Twitter @nerdprideradio, facebook.com/nerdprideradio. But as always, the very best way to talk to me is you come sign up for my forums at nerdprideradio.com/forums. Sign up there, send me a message. We will hang out together, become best friends in the world. We'll have fun. And welcome now to Listener Betrayal 109. Before I start every cast, I go out and I post out on the internet that, hey, I'm recording. If you guys want me to read something on this cast, post it here, and I will read it off. You can go to Facebook and go to Angers. Okay, I have fairly short legs already, so it's really hard to type. But then if I have legs the length of my... Then it would be... Jesus, what a tough question. I'm going to go with the long fingers. It's creepy and weird, but I'm going to go with the long fingers. I would have a tough time. How about, can I meet in the middle? Can I have half-sized legs that then have my fingers being equally as long as those half-sized legs and just meet in the middle? Because then technically, if I accept that and I now have my legs and my fingers are both, you know, I don't know, 17 inches long, then I've met the requirements of, hey, I've got fingers as long as my legs, right? So let's go with that. I'm going to meet in the middle on it. Let's see his next one. Kyle again says, hey, have you talked about the Gleaming the Cube bulletin board RPG yet? How awesome is that? Oh, jerk. Yes, I did. Gleaming the Cube is the game that my brother is running where we're just playing Office Workers. And I haven't looked at it all weekend long because I've been out of town. But my brother then adds, what's your character's name in that again? Yeah. My character's name is Tyler. All right. Tyler Finch. And I mentioned in a private message to him my name, Tyler Finch. And I also mentioned in one of the posts in the game itself, I mentioned my last name, Finch. My brother, who apparently doesn't read his own game, sent me a message to say, hey, what's your character's last name? I need to work it in. So I sent back, I said, well, it's Finch. And he says, oh, too late. You took too long to respond. So now your name is Cox. Now you're Tyler Cox. Yeah. So apparently my name is Tyler Cox, and I'll just have to deal with that. But Finch was working so much better for me. Really. Oh, well. Let's see. Next one. Next one is also from my brother Kyle, who says, are you surprised that more people haven't posted up here? Considering you started recording at 2 p.m. on a Monday, and it's now at 2:43. Yeah, that is a little surprising, but, you know, traffic's sporadic. It shows up when it shows up. And Kyle then says, oh, I get it. It's Indigenous Peoples Day, and everyone has the day off work, right? Is that what's going on? Lazy asses. And then, and it is, in fact, Columbus Day, which is the official reason I have off of work, is because it's Columbus Day, but it is also Indigenous Peoples Day. So Talvin then says, I thought it was Celebrate Imperialism Day. Oh, well. I'm not a government employee, so I don't get the day off anyway. Yeah, sucks to be you, doesn't it? Talvin adds, what exactly would be today's model of a modern major general? Oh, that is a great question. The idea of a modern major general, it's really about being an all-around Renaissance man. All right, it's about being well-informed, intelligent, brilliantly intelligent. But also still being classy. And highfalutin, having, you know, proper social graces and mixing in the upper crust social circles. It's really, honestly, it's about being James Bond. That would be the modern major general. And it depends on the James Bond that you're looking at. There's the original James Bond from the books. There's the different portrayals of him, but quite the most common perception of him as being this multifaceted and multi-talented upper crust British gentleman persona on top of a man who is also physically incredibly capable and also a ruthless killer. I think that would be probably the modern equivalent of a modern major general, at least as the song portrayed it, maybe with less of the assassinations, but still along those lines, that sort of character. So Kyle then says, hey, Talvin, I have a question for you. DM Darks, how would you describe him? And Talvin responds, Edward Snowden, a whistleblower. Oh, no, that's not an answer. Here it is. Let's skip down one. I'll go to Talvin's actual response. He doesn't describe DM Darks as Edward Snowden. He describes him as awesome, of course. All right, but then backing up one, Talvin says, Edward Snowden, a whistleblower who should be thanked for exposing domestic spying, or a spy who did irreparable harm to our intelligence apparatus. In my accounting, Edward Snowden's a hero. In my accounting, Edward Snowden did a necessary job, and he is increasing transparency. He is, and again, ultimately, has it made any change other than the fact that now people know what the NSA is up to, they know what our government is up to, and we've all gone, oh, well, yeah, I guess there's nothing you can do about that, huh? And now we're all accepting of whatever the next step in the restriction of our rights is going to be. But no, he absolutely did the right thing. And the fact that the government and the people around him want to characterize him as some sort of villain because he's pointing out the horrible things that they are doing. Well, that's their characterization of him. In my mind, go back and listen to, go ahead and listen to Common Sense. Listen to Dan Carlin when he talks about Edward Snowden. And what it comes down to for me is Edward Snowden had nothing to gain by what he did. He knew for sure that the most powerful organizations in this country, the most powerful nation on earth, were going to attempt to destroy him for speaking out. And yet he spoke out anyway. And he knew that because he had already seen numerous people before him who had spoken out against the U.S. government and our spying and our surveillance programs. He had seen people who had tried to speak up, people who had tried to blow the whistle from the inside, people who had tried to work within the system to make changes, and what those people got for their troubles was jail time, removal from their positions, their lives being destroyed, false charges being, well, I say false charges, but, oh, look, criminal charges being brought against them for God knows what, because they chose to speak out. And so Snowden knew that if he speaks out, the most powerful nation on earth is going to do its level best to try and destroy him. And in fact, it's wound up with him living in exile in Russia. By his own words, he loves America. He wishes he was living in America. He doesn't want to be in Russia. He's there because he has no choice. Because if he goes anywhere else, he's going to be arrested as a traitor and spend the rest of his life in prison. He would rather be in exile than in prison. So he knew that this is what was going to happen to him, and he chose to do it anyway. That is not, to me, that is not the actions of a man who is out for personal gain. It is not the actions of a man who, I mean, and he did it all publicly. It's not like he was even, you know, like I say, he did what he did because he thought the public needed to know, and I agree with him. I think we needed to know. I think it was important that we know what our government was up to behind our backs. The kind of things that people have been saying, oh, yeah, the government does this, and they do this, and they do this. And we had had all sorts of public debates where people on one side of the aisle would say, well, no, of course we're not doing that. And this is Republicans and Democrats. All right, I say side of the aisle. But there were people in both parties who were arguing vehemently that our government doesn't do that. We wouldn't do that. That would be illegal. It would be blah, blah, that it was they were arguing wholeheartedly that was completely out of line and would never happen. And the people who were advocating that were seen as crackpots of a sort. And now all of a sudden it comes out and we all go, oh, I guess we are doing that. Okay. Yeah, you know what? You're right. I guess we do kind of spy. And now it's a matter of, yeah, but this spying is justified. Anyway, no, I have respect for Edward Snowden and the actions that he took. So, for what that's worth. Dalvin then says, what are your early season picks to play in the Super Bowl? Super Bowl, what? Super Bowl XL? That's Super Bowl 50, not extra large. It's called Roman numerals. Well, no, I know that, but to me, XL is 40, isn't it? I mean, I don't mean to correct you because I'm no sports expert, so therefore I don't know. And the answer is, as much as I said earlier that I enjoy football, when I say I enjoy football, I mean I enjoy local football. I enjoy exactly that high school football that I was just saying that we need to do something about. Because I go to the local high school games and I watch kids that I know participating in this sport and I cheer them on. And that's the extent of my football watching. I've tried to be a Huskers fan. I'm from Nebraska. You've got to be a Huskers fan. When I was growing up, my dad has been a diehard Cowboys fan from day one. And so, of course, the rest of the family was too. And I've tried watching professional football. I've tried watching college football, and it doesn't excite me. But going to an actual football game in person for my local high school, I enjoy that. And I'll watch that football. So I have absolutely no picks because I don't even know that I could – I don't know. Could I name half the teams that are in the league now? I'm not going to try, but could I? I don't know. Maybe. So I have no opinion on this whatsoever. And Talvin says, hey, Kyle, I have a question for you. Would you tell us something embarrassing about Mike's childhood? That is real listener betrayal. Now, my brother would never do that to me. Calvin then says, when are we going to get more random avatars? Oh, I know. I'll get random avatars coming out soon. We have a random avatar program on the website, and it used to be that about every 10 days to 2 weeks, I would put up new avatars for everybody, always on a theme. So it's, you know, it's robots, or it's Pixar characters, or, you know, it's superheroes, or it's whatever the theme is. And right now we're on superhero mashup kind of things, and unfortunately it's been this way for months. So I feel bad. I feel bad. I'll work on it. Talvin also says, my boring conference call is finished, so now I must return to work. Can't wait to listen to the podcast and hear Kyle's embarrassing story, and a note to future Kyle, in the event that you don't share any story at all, I am disappointed with you. Okay. Kyle says, my picks for the Super Bowl are easy. Green Bay and New England. Yeah, of course. Super embarrassing story about Mike from our childhood. I'm just going to read it. I'm going to read it and not look ahead. We used to clean up a thrift store on the Air Force base we lived on when we were kids. I was in fifth grade, so Mike must have been in eighth. Anyways, one day we went in after hours to clean it, as we always did, and someone saw some kids breaking in quotes, to the thrift store. So they called the MPs, the base police. So the base police come in while I'm getting the mop bucket ready, and Mike is taking a crap. The MP opens the door on Mike pooping and tells him to clean himself out and come out and talk, clean himself up and come out and talk to them. Mike did, and I think the MPs made us leave because there wasn't anyone available by phone to confirm that we worked there, but I might be wrong about that. To this day, that's why Mike can't achieve orgasm unless he's pooping in front of a cop. Okay, no, that's all true. I don't remember him actually coming. I mean, he opened the door to the bathroom, but I was in the stall. And so he came in and he was in the bathroom, but not actually staring at me pooping. So, and then said, yeah, he needed me to come out front. And so I did. But yeah, that was bad. The MPs on that base I did not get along with them at all. It was stuff like that. It was minor harassment stuff. I remember one day my brother and I were walking home. Probably walking home from cleaning the thrift shop, in fact. And as we're walking home, we stopped, and there is a flagpole, because the parade ground for the base is right in front of our house. And so as we're walking home from the thrift shop, here's the flagpole on the parade ground. Maybe we were coming home from buying comics. I don't know what we were doing. And so we stop at the parade ground, and we're looking at the flagpole. And I was just trying to ask my brother, I'm like, okay, add an estimate. How tall do you think this flagpole is? And for me, this was a math problem. And I was looking up at it, and I'm like holding my hand up and kind of trying to gauge with my hand about how tall I think this thing is. And I'm like, oh, you know, we could measure the shadow, and we could do some trigonometry type stuff. I don't know. And we're looking at, and the cops came up and stopped us. I mean, like we had just started walking away, and then the MPs come up and they stop us, and they're like, so, what are you up to? I'm like, just walking home. Really? You seemed really interested in that flagpole. You got something planned? Like, no, we were looking at the flagpole, and I was honest with him. I said, no, actually, I was trying to do some calculations to figure out how tall it is, but I wasn't getting a good estimate. He's like, yeah, sure you were, whatever. And, like, give us all this hassle, and ultimately they just let us go home. They didn't do anything about it. But we mentioned it to my dad later. Oh, he was pissed. And I don't know if he did anything about it, but, yeah, they were annoying. I don't know. Maybe they just didn't have enough to do. Who knows? Kyle then goes on to his next post. He says, when are we going to get more random avatars? And Kyle says, yeah, I got irritated, so I just switched over to a real picture of me. Get with it, Mike. Fine. Whatever. I'll get on it. And then I post done. So we're finished with that one. And now we go out to Facebook. And on Facebook, I go to A Nerd Pride Radio. And let's see what kind of posts we have out here. I have, oh my gosh. 4 comments? Nice. Let's go done. And the 4 comments out here are from Nelly. Nelly says, hope you had a great weekend. I did. We had a really good time. Like I said, we were in the Black Hills. We went to Rushmore. We went exploring a cave. Well, not exploring. It was a tour. But still, we went in the cave. We went to Bear Country. We had a great time. Do you have any exciting plans for Halloween? No, not really. The kids are going to dress up. They're going to go trick-or-treating. But they're getting a little bit older, so they don't even need as close a supervision anymore. I mean, you know, we trick-or-treat in fairly safe neighborhoods. So off they go. And any traditions? No, not really. We get dressed up. We find a big group of friends. We all go out trick-or-treating together. Although, God, one of the best Halloweens we had. This was when Jacob was a junior in high school. So this was 4 years ago, maybe. Maybe he was a sophomore. Anyway, 4 or 5 years ago. And there was a exchange student from India. And her name was Swara. And Swara was a senior at the time. And Swara was awesome. I mean, she was just a lot of fun. And Swara was so excited about Halloween because they didn't have Halloween in India. And so she was so thrilled that she went out, she got herself a witch costume, and she was dressed up, and she, there was some party that she was going to go to later, but we came by and we knock on the door and we're trick-or-treating, and she's there in her witch costume. And we talked about trick-or-treating. She's like, oh, wow, I've never been trick-or-treating because it's been, you know, India and blah, blah, blah. All right. And we're like, well, do you want to go with us? You could trick-or-treat with us. I mean, she's a senior in high school, but we're like, you've never been before? We have, go ahead. Walk along with us. Go up with the little kids. Knock on the door. Do the whole business. She's like, could I? Really? She had so much fun. We had a great time. It was just really cool. That's one of my favorite Halloween stories. And then she got a razor blade in her apple and she died. Okay, that didn't happen. Then from DM Darks, Patrick says, how awesome is... No, he doesn't say that. Pat says, self-paranoia check. Were you serious the other night about the atmospherics to the game, or were you hinting that I just need to get on with the plot? I love this about DM Darks. This is one of my favorite things, is he's... I mean, we've been playing this game for 2 years now. 2 years we've been playing this game online. Our characters have advanced to 6th, almost 7th level now. We're having a great time, and we tell him constantly how much of a great time we're having, and yet, consistently, he's paranoid that he's not doing it right. This is the best game I have ever played in, and consistently, he's worried that he's just, it's not going well. Maybe people aren't quite happy with it. Shut up, Pat. God, you're a fool. No, we're having an awesome time. And when I said awesome atmospherics, I completely meant it. It was a great setup. Oh man, we were having so much fun. No, I'm not worried. We came out of the Twisted Fae Forest, where we had met the Puckwudgie and the cool fairy dragon and all this stuff. And then we come out and now we're in an area beset with rain. I mean, it's rain and it's swamp and it's dismal and it's wet. And we very much have this oppressive atmosphere going. And I was really digging it because we're coming into a town where the people are just beset by tragedy after tragedy after tragedy. It's just been terrible stuff. And they're just all just kind of taking it in stride. It's like such an Eeyore sort of attitude. Well, the ship went down. I don't know, 100 people died, but what are you going to do? That's what it felt like. And my character, who is very chipper and upbeat all the time, was getting really annoyed with them. It's like, you just accept this? What is wrong with you people? How do you get? And finally someone goes, yeah, maybe they could use a little cheering up. Maybe after all this tragedy, maybe they could stand to have someone improve their mood, lift their attitude. I'm like, oh, that's right. I'm a bard. I remember now. And so I went and performed and we had a great time and it was, I had a great time. That was an awesome game. And when I said I loved the atmospherics, I was saying I really liked the atmosphere that you provided for that game because, again, that wet, dismal, dark, depressive, oppressive sort of mood really added to the whole thing. And I was really getting into it. And I enjoyed every moment of that. All right. From the dismal, depressing onset of everything. And then we get in and we start doing the bard performance and everyone's having a party and we did information gathering while the party's going on. And I thought it was really good. I had a great time. No, there was no getting on with anything. That was wonderful. You just stop worrying. You're being dumb. Okay. It was a great game. Kyle says, hey, was it Mysterium you played at Gen Con? My local game store got it and Love Letter, which I plan to buy. I'm wondering what you thought of it. I think it was Mysterium. If it's the picture game, it's like Clue but with pictures. I really, really like that game. I think the box set that we got that we were playing with, I think is really broken. Okay. I don't know if we just didn't have all the rules or if we weren't looking at them correctly. Maybe we just weren't interpreting something right. But again, the idea is you're trying to communicate to people using only pictures. You have, you know, a handful of images in front of you, and you have to pick from these images and go, okay, here's the impression I'm trying to get across to you. So I'll give you these cards, and okay, I got to give you this impression, so I give you these cards. But it's all nothing but pictures. That's the only way you can communicate. It's like the weirdest form of charades ever. And I liked that aspect of it. I thought it was really creative. The pictures were beautiful. The art was gorgeous. I mean, if you're paying $50-$60 for it, that might be a little much. But as a $40 game, it's very interesting. And again, while the rule set as we understood them at the time was really broken, we still made a viable game out of it and had a great time with it. And the mental exercise for you and your kids and other people who might play with you is just phenomenal. It is a completely different way of looking at things, and it was really, really cool. So I would say it's a good one to buy. I would recommend it. I really would. Like I say, it might be broken when you get it, but that doesn't matter. You can still make something really, really good out of it. So, and then the last one is, just to make sure we're on the same page, here's the game I'm looking at. Okay, well, let me click on this link. Mysterium. There it is. Yeah, I'm pretty sure that's the one. I didn't see the box, but a bunch of foreign names. So, and in the 1920s, supernaturalist, new house in Scotland. Yes, he gathers up a bunch of eminent mediums, and then each of the mediums then have to try and communicate with the ghost. So yes, you've got six players who are all mediums who are trying to contact the spirit world, and you have one player who is the ghost, and the ghost can only communicate in images, so it has to give images to each of the mediums. Yes, this is exactly the game. So yeah, fascinating. Absolutely fascinating game. Even if it's broken, it's still fascinating. So I would recommend it highly. We had a lot of fun playing, and it was a very different style of gameplay. It was really cool. So, and then that's it. We're done. So say goodnight, R2, or good afternoon, R2. See ya.